What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Saturday. It is October 1st, the start of the best month of the year. So today's Saturday Classic pulls from our previous October episodes. It is the Hagley Woods murder, which we covered on Halloween of 2016. This murder inspired graffiti that continues to appear today with variations on the question, who put Bella in the witch elm?
An update that I don't actually think has made it into an installment of Unearthed. In 2018, Professor Caroline Wilkinson and Sarah Shrimpton from Face Lab, Liverpool John Moores University, used photos of the skeletal remains of this person who's become known as Bella to create a reconstruction of what she may have looked like. That reconstruction has appeared in various books and TV shows, but the mystery of what happened to this person remains unsolved.
So enjoy this story.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And it's Halloween, Tracy.
I know.
Hooray! It's the best day of the year. And today, to celebrate Halloween, we're going to talk about a history mystery. It's got everything. It's got a mystery body. It's got witches. It's got espionage. It's got everything. And it's never been solved. Though, as we get to the end of the episode, we're going to get into some interesting math that tries to sort out the situation. But I don't want to spoil any of that, so let's just hop right in.
So in the 1940s, a grisly discovery was made in a tree in Worcestershire, England. On April 18th of 1943, 4 teenage boys were looking for birds' nests, and they sent the best climber up an elm tree. In the hollow of the tree, he did not find a bird's nest. He found a skull. Initially, he thought it might be an animal skull, but when he pulled it from its place in the tree, he realized, no, it was a human skull.
And there was also a little bit of decomposing flesh still attached to the skull, as well as a patch of hair. And this skull had distinctive teeth. They were crooked, and there was sort of what looks in pictures like almost a pronounced overbite, but also some lower jaw deformation.
The boys, whose names were Robert Hart, Thomas Willits, Bob Farmer, and Fred Payne, were terrified. They were also really worried that they were going to get in trouble because they had been trespassing in Hagley Woods. This estate, which was near Birmingham, was private. They had no permission to be in there looking for nests. They had also been hunting rabbits, so they'd basically been poaching, and they had been doing all of that day with no permission. So the boys promised each other that they would keep it a secret. They put the skull back in its spot in the tree, and then they left.
But the youngest boy of that group, Tommy Willits, did not, in fact, keep their secret. He was really deeply upset by the discovery, and he eventually confessed his troubles to his father. And his father immediately contacted police, and of course, an investigation began.
When the police examined this elm tree, they found not only the skull, but also additional remains, including the majority of the skeleton. There were also pieces of clothing, a wedding band, and a single shoe with a crepe sole. The skeletal remains of one of this body's hands were also found buried near the tree.
Examination of the remains by a pathologist concluded that the skeleton was a woman who had been between 35 and 40 when she died. She was 5 feet or 1.5 meters tall, brunette, and had probably given birth at some point.
Another man involved in the investigation was forensic biologist Dr. John Lund, who at the age of 101 told the BBC radio show Punt PI about his examination of the remains. That interview happened in 2015. So he had been working under James Webster at the West Midlands Forensic Science Laboratory, and he kept notes on the case. The body arrived at his lab on April 20th, 1943, 2 days after it had been discovered. The bones had absolutely no remaining flesh. The hair that was attached to the skull was quite fragile, but he determined that it had not been chemically treated with color or any kind of curling solution.
And the woman, Webster and Lund concluded, had been asphyxiated by a piece of taffeta that had been shoved in her throat. Additionally, it was believed that the body had been hidden in the tree while it was still warm, feet first, and that it had been there for about a year and a half, placing her death somewhere around October of 1941.
Efforts started immediately to try to identify what appeared to be the victim of a murder. Missing persons reports were combed through for anybody who might line up with this mystery discovery. There were detailed descriptions of what she had probably been wearing based on what Webster had been able to extrapolate from this shoe and the clothing remains that had been collected. There was a whole reference through the dental records with dentists from all around Great Britain.
But because of the war, missing persons records were something of a mess at this point. But even so, all known listings were reviewed for a possible connection. Literally thousands and thousands of records. But nothing matched. No results with dental records either, despite the fact that she had some unique features, including that jaw deformity and a recently pulled tooth that had been pulled shortly before she had died. And they really cast a wide net by placing this information in dental journals, hoping that they would find a dentist that recognized any of this information. But the case went cold.
A small clue finally came from a man who had been working in management at one of the area's industrial companies. He had reported to police in July 1941 that he was walking to his home near Hagley Wood and he heard a scream. Another person, a teacher who was also on the path but coming in the opposite direction, had confirmed that he too had heard this screaming.
And police were called to the scene at the time that these two men heard this scream, which would have been close enough to the October death estimate to have been a possible connection to the murder. But police in 1941 found nothing where the two men had heard the woman screaming, and they found nothing when they revisited the scene in 1943 after reviewing that 1941 report.
Just as the case seemed to be running entirely cold in December of 1943, odd graffiti started popping up in the area. Scrawled in various places were the words, "Who put Bella down the witch elm?" There were actually a lot of variations on the phrase, including "Who put Lubella down the witch elm?" and "Who put Bella in the witch elm?" There were also some more instances of graffiti that strayed from this question format and said things more like "Hagley Wood Bella."
And as a point of note, as we say this, we're not saying witch here in the sense you might be thinking, what with this being Halloween. When we say witch elm, the spelling is W-Y-C-H. That's a tree, also known as a Scots elm. However, in several things that I read, there were people that were adamant that this was in fact not a witch elm, but another type of elm that's often mistaken for one. Just wanted to include that in the interest of horticultural history. And to clarify that it is not witches in the Halloween-y sense at this point.
It is creepy, though.
Yeah.
Even without that spelling difference, still creepy. These graffiti messages appeared to be the work of a single person. They were all written in the same type of chalk in block letters, and it was considered that they maybe were just somebody trying to play a prank. But there had been no leads in the case that had actually panned out up to that point.
So these bizarre missives opened up two new lines of investigation. Number one, was there really someone named Bella who might be involved in this body that had been found in Hagley Woods? And number two, who was the artist behind the graffiti, and did they actually know something about the murder?
But nothing, not the name Bella, not the dental records, not the hunt for the graffiti artist, seemed to lead to any actual information. This woman seemed to be entirely untraceable. And as the months dragged into years, all kinds of other theories started to pop up about the identity of this woman in the tree.
And before we get to those theories that started popping up in an effort to explain the skeleton in Hagley Woods, let's take a brief break and we'll have a word from one of our sponsors.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source, and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
So, we promised you a little witchiness at the beginning in the actual witch sense, not in the W-Y-C-H tree sense. So we're getting there. Professor Margaret Murray of University College London, who was an anthropologist, Egyptologist, archaeologist, and folklorist, put forth the theory that Bella, as she had at that point become known thanks to that graffiti, had been the victim of a ritualistic occult murder. Murray's evidence to support this theory was the fact that the hand bones had been found away from the body, and she believed that the ceremony that had claimed Bella's life is one which is called the Hand of Glory, in which the hand cut from the victim could be used for divining or protection as part of the practice of witchcraft. And the sensational nature of this idea really took hold in both the press and the public imagination.
This reminds me of the satanic ritual abuse panic.
It is absolutely the same thing.
That was not really founded in reality. So, when another murder victim was discovered in a neighboring village, this one, a man who was pinned to the ground with a pitchfork, people started linking the two deaths, even though it had been 2 years between the two. Scotland Yard, who was spurred on by Margaret Murray, started investigating this witchcraft angle because there had been no other new leads in the case. And as with all the other leads, it got them nowhere, had no real information that was gathered as a result of Murray's theories.
And as a side note, while Margaret Murray was famous for a time in the early 20th century as an expert, and I should put that in the air quotes, on witchcraft, most of her writings on the subject were controversial at the time, and they were eventually debunked, and she was largely discredited. She is actually on my short list for an episode all her own, but she was basically kind of making stuff up.
Yeah, the first time I read through this outline, I got to this description of her purported satanic, not satanic, but like her purported ritualistic occult murderer. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Really? Actual anthropologist for real? Did you just make this up? Like, what? Really?
You know, she used logic that made sense to her. But I don't know that she was kind of fabricating these in an effort to be misleading or sensationalist. I think she might have believed them, but I will do more research on her perhaps in the future.
Maybe that will be an October episode next year.
I maybe can't wait till then, but we'll see. Sure.
That's cool too then. So 10 years after that initial grisly discovery in the tree, there was another possibility that came to light. This time, a woman going by the name Anna from Claverley contacted the press in a letter. She was responding to a series of articles that had been written in 1953 about the murder, saying she knew who had killed Bella. Anna's claim was that Bella had, in fact, been part of an espionage play gone wrong.
And the letter read, "Finish your articles regarding the Witch Elm crime, by all means. They are interesting to your readers, but you will never solve the mystery. The one person who could give the answer is now beyond the jurisdiction of earthly courts. Much as I hate having to use a nom de plume, I think you would appreciate it if you know me. The only clues I can give you are that the person responsible for the crime died insane in 1942 and that the victim was Dutch and arrived illegally in England about 1941. I have no wish to recall any more."
Anna's story cast Bella as a Dutch woman who was passing information from a British officer to a trapeze artist who appeared in local theatrical productions. That trapeze artist would then pass that intel on to the Germans. Bella, in this story, had become too knowledgeable about this chain of information, and she was killed because of that knowledge. And then her body was taken to Hagley Woods, where it was hidden in the tree.
Of course, this fleshing out of the story past that initial letter came because the police got involved, of course, once the press got this letter, and they questioned her. Because the area around Worcestershire was home to a number of munitions factories during World War II, it had been scrutinized by the Nazis for information during the war. It had also been a target. So authorities did pursue this new German spy ring angle with some level of vigor.
Some aspects of Anna's story checked out. There had been a British man connected to a German spy ring in the area, but he had died in Stafford Mental Hospital in 1942. And as it turned out, that man was related to Anna. Anna's real name was Una Mossop. Una had, she told police, been married to Jack Mossop, and he had confessed the murder to her before his death. It was her understanding that he, along with a Dutch man named Van Ralt, who was also involved, meant to scare this woman by leaving her in the tree when she was passed out because she was inebriated. They did not actually intend to kill her.
Yeah, the idea was that she would wake up stuck in this tree and see the error of her ways in being foolish and would straighten up and act right. The police were unable to locate this Van Ralt character, and it appears that they sort of abandoned the trail there. Years later, however, another woman named Judith O'Donovan told police and investigators that she was Jack Mossop's sort of distant cousin. I think he might have been her husband's cousin. And that their entire family basically knew that Jack had been a traitor and that he had been connected to a woman's death. So it sort of supported this spying idea and the fact that he may have been connected to the woman in the Witch Elm.
Another decade passed before another theory emerged, and this one kind of combined the previous two notions. In 1968, a book called Murder by Witchcraft was published, written by David McCormick.
And McCormick penned an explanatory narrative in which the woman from the tree had been a Nazi spy named Clarabella, who was also an occultist. According to McCormick, who said that he had been able to look at German intelligence reports that listed the woman by her code name, she was called Clara.
His assertion was that the Bella in the graffiti was referencing Clarabella. McCormick's book indicated that Clara had been sent into the county of West Midlands by parachute in 1941, but that she was never heard from again. Of course, these roads all proved to be fruitless, just like all the others had, in terms of churning up any real information on the case at the time.
3 full decades after McCormick's book was released, the case of Bella's identity once again gained attention. And at this time, pieces of the puzzle started to come together in the minds of interested parties. For one, when the case closed, which was actually in 2005, the case file was published. And in it, there was a mention of a search for Bella's body to be exhumed so that DNA evidence could be gathered, because that would certainly be helpful. But that search was for her body was unsuccessful.
It turns out that this failure to find her body was in part because they had been looking in completely the wrong location. It had been presumed that Bella had been buried locally, but in fact, her remains had gone to the University of Birmingham to a colleague of the original pathologist in the case for additional testing. And that was a detail that had sort of been lost in the 60-some years since the case had been active before it was closed in 2005.
And unfortunately, the skeletal remains disappeared from the university's records and their lab, lost forever to time. And any records from the University of Birmingham about any testing that was done on those remains have also vanished. This has led to some speculation of a cover-up, but it could also just be really terrible bookkeeping.
Yeah, I'm going to hold out hope that one day it will be one of those, look what we found in our own collection.
Yeah.
This set of human remains that nobody labeled correctly.
And the thing to keep in mind, too, and I know this from my years working in a library, is that there were things that happened during wartime that really messed up record keeping. You know, it wasn't necessarily that people were lazy or trying to cover anything up. There were times when an air raid would happen and everything mm-hmm. would be shuffled around and stuff got lost.
Yeah. Well, and even if you are really careful, human beings still make errors. And if you have a gigantic collection and are still 99% accurate, that's a bunch of errors. Anyway, coming up, we're going to talk about an MI5 file that might actually give some weight to the narrative that McCormick had reconstructed. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from one of our awesome sponsors.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
My name is Johnny B. Goode. and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun.
And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So another bit of information that also shed light on this possibility that McCormick's theory had some truth to it. A declassified file in the British National Archives on Gestapo agent Joseph Jacobs, who was an inexperienced, undertrained agent that was sent to gather information on weather patterns in the London area. Jacobs had parachuted into Cambridgeshire in 1941, broken his ankle in the drop, and was arrested by the Home Guard, which was a World War II defense organization that was part of the British Army.
One of the items that Jacobs was carrying when the Home Guard apprehended him was a photograph. That photo was a picture of a woman named Clara Bowerly, a singer and film actress that Jacobs said was also his paramour. He also told his captors that Clara Bowerly was a Nazi secret agent and was supposed to parachute into West Midlands, and that the two of them were supposed to have made contact.
Jacobs was executed by firing squad in the late summer of 1941, and this turned out to be the last execution at the Tower of London. He could also easily be an episode subject on his own.
These MI5 records on Jacobs included an investigation of Bowerly. She was born in 1906, meaning that in 1941 she would have been 35, which was the right age to fit the pathology report of the Witch Elm victim. And she did work in music halls in the West Midland area for 2 years before World War II began. And she learned to speak English with no trace of a German accent. When the woman who had been calling herself Anna contacted the police in the 1950s, claiming to have knowledge of the crime, she had mentioned a music hall in the information that she gave to the police.
And while this might seem to tidily wrap up the identity of Bella quite nicely, because the pieces do seem to fit together, Joseph Jacobs' granddaughter, who has long examined the details of her grandfather's life, actually obtained a death certificate for Clara Bowerly, indicating that, in fact, she died in Berlin in December 1942 of veronal poisoning, i.e. not stuffed into a tree in England.
Of course, gossip churned up a huge variety of other possibilities about Bella's identity. She might have taken shelter in the tree during an air raid and gotten stuck. She might have been murdered by a lover and clumsily hidden in the tree. She may have been a traveler or a Romani who was killed out of mere suspicion.
And there was even a lead that, at least in terms of plausibility, seems fairly valid. So on April 7th of 1944, a sex worker from Birmingham told police that a woman that she knew had gone missing on Hagley Road or in that area 3 years earlier. And that woman's name was Bella. If this information garnered follow-up from the police, it does not appear to have gotten much traction.
Incidentally, this whole graffiti of who put Bella in the witch elm has continued in the 7 decades since the murder was discovered. There's an obelisk in Hagley Park called the Witchbury Obelisk, and it's been the most frequently tagged location since the 1970s. Presumably, at this point, it's kids trying to be spooky, and the spelling has changed from W-Y-C-H to W-I-T-C-H. It's definitely not somebody trying to communicate a kind of clue about the unsolved murder case at this point. It is like Kilroy was here, but
exactly. And it's very possible that it never was anything but people pulling pranks, but we just don't know. In 2014, a statistical analysis of all of the known data in the Hagley Woods murder was done by researchers Norman Fenton and Martin Neal using Bayesian analysis, and they determined a number of things. They're actually in that BBC radio piece that we mentioned earlier, but then they also wrote a paper separately where they explain it all, and that thing is fabulous. So it'll be in the show notes. But the first thing that they determined is that there is a 99% probability that the cause of death was criminal.
That one is the completely unsurprising.
Correct.
There's a 97% probability that Bella was not British, less than 2% chance that she was Dutch, and an 18% chance that she was German.
There is a 93% probability that Bella was still alive when she was put in the tree.
That's awful.
That kind of holds with that whole story that the men had put her there to scare her and that she had somehow become stuck.
There's a 33% possibility that Jack Mossop was involved in her death and 7% that it was some kind of intelligence service. In order to increase that probability to a 95% chance that Mossop was involved, the researchers' model would have required 4 additional witnesses in addition to Una Mossop and his cousin Judith.
And there is a 25% probability that Bella was a spy and a 16% probability that she was a prostitute.
In their paper on this study, the researchers were very clear that there are lots of variables that could really quickly change the whole statistical picture. For example, they're working under the assumption that police involved in the investigation really did exhaust all the leads in each instance where they felt like there was a dead end. If they left a stone unturned here or there, then the model shifts significantly. Additionally, there's the credibility of various witnesses.
Yeah, if you increase or decrease the credibility rating of various witnesses, that model changes really quickly as well. But of course, all of those numbers do not settle this crime conclusively, and Bella's story remains a mystery. And considering the age of the case, it is unlikely that this murder will ever be solved unless, as Tracy mentioned earlier, the remains or the university lab files suddenly turn up. So that is our spooky unsolved mystery for Halloween. And we hope yours is safe and that you do not end up in a tree stuck.
Please
in any
don't.
Way.
I mean, would, you can climb a tree safely if you want to do that.
I have never climbed a tree.
Really?
Yeah. They're dirty. And I'm scared. They're dirty and I'm scared. That's the bottom line.
My mother had very clear rules about how large the branch could be for us to safely climb the tree. And if we climbed up into branches that were narrower than that, I think it had to be at least as big as our arm. I can't remember if it was our arm or our leg. There was a body part that we had to compare before we put our weight on any tree limb.
Yeah, my mother, tree climber.
My mother is very concerned with safety.
I've had many friends through the years who are big into tree climbing, and they always look at me like I'm some sort of mutant when I'm like, I've never climbed a tree, and I feel no urge to change that.
That's fine. Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday. Since this episode is out of the archive, if you heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of the show, that could be obsolete now. Our current email address is historypodcast@iheartradio.com. Our old How Stuff Works email address no longer works. You can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.